Easter begins with a surprise. It's not a little surprise. It's a really big surprise. Can you imagine this scene with me? You are walking to a graveside in the early morning hours, and a deep despair has settled in your heart. Sun has not yet broken the horizon, but a gray twilight is beginning to surround the path ahead of you. You got up early because you want to take something fragrant and beautiful to honor that place of absence, that place where your heart aches. But when you arrive, as Mary Magdalene did, you discover something deeply disconcerting. The thing that was the object of your despair and heartbreak is missing. Its cover has been removed and there's nothing inside. Now I would be thinking, what else could possibly go wrong here? You already lost something that you love. And if that isn't enough, you can't even properly grieve now. It is salt in the wound. Emotions of anger and frustration, compounded by an even greater sadness, well up. So you turn to say to no one in particular, to the person who just happens to be standing nearest, "What the hell? Did you do this?" You are so caught up in grief and despair that you can't even see what's standing right beside you. Now, I admit that there might be something contrived, maybe even a little bit comical, about this scene. When I read it this year, I wondered how Mary Magdalene could not have recognized Jesus. But the more I thought about it, the more I realize it's understandable. She had a certainty about the way things are, thinking this person she loved was dead, gone, buried. It takes a whole new way of looking at things to recognize that isn't so. Easter is about a deep, disconcerting, paradigm-shifting shock that in the face of loss, brokenness, destruction, life has shown up. It appears and winks and says, "I'm not dead yet. Look, I'm right here." This week, it's been heartbreaking to watch the Notre Dame Cathedral burn. The video of the central spire falling, which is played again and again on several news outlets, was dramatic and sad. As I was watching that building collapse in flames, it made me think of a book about a church like Notre Dame. I'd not thought about it in years. It's Ken Follett's The Pillars of the Earth. This is a sprawling, beautiful narrative about the construction of a medieval cathedral. It details the ways that the stones were pulled with ropes from a quarry miles away and then hewn into different shapes. It talks about the care with which the wood was chopped and whittled and raised into a skeletal structure. It talks about the artistry and the intricacy of the red, clear, and blue rose window. Most of all, it talks about the people who are building it, how it took decades to create, how it housed the dreams and ambitions of an entire generation. So when I saw Notre Dame in flames, I thought of that novel. I thought about how the people, the generations that constructed Notre Dame would not have been unlike those people in the story. They worked for decades to construct that church as a home for their dreams. I thought about how painful and sad that image of its central spire burning and falling would have been to them. Now, The Pillars of the Earth is a novel, and I want to recognize that. I'm not confusing it with an historical account. But there is a scene in it that I find compelling in light of the news this week. At one point over the many decades of the fictional cathedral's construction, a jealous rival bishop decides he does not want the project to succeed. And so he plots to burn the cathedral to the ground. Standing around the ashes are the traumatized town people who poured years of their life into its construction. Some of them walk away in grief, never to return to the site. But others decide to stick it out. Their bonds are strengthened and they become fully committed to rebuilding. In doing so, they are surprised to discover something precious, something that could not be destroyed by the fire. It was the solidarity and the community of the town itself. Discovering that took some time, and it was a shock to many of them, because in the midst of destruction, it's easy to see only ashes. I don't want to be glib about the burning of Notre Dame. Countless objects of irreplaceable art have been destroyed. And yet I do wonder, with the world outcry about its loss, with the recognition that something precious has been broken, is there a possibility of community, of hope, of partnership, of cosmopolitanism that might emerge from those ashes? One columnist wrote that we may very well look back on this as the Great Fire of 2019. But as one of her colleagues said, perhaps it will be an opportunity to look forward to 3019, to reflect not only on our failures, but also on a path forward as a world community to something better. Perhaps a more local example may help with this. I was privileged this month to be the lead coordinator of a vigil to recognize the 60th anniversary of the Deerfield fight for integrated housing. 60 years ago, Deerfield said no to an effort to bring racially integrated housing to the town. When models of the homes went up, they were vandalized. A cross was burned on someone's lawn. The town voted to side with fear rather than side with love. But this month, as clergy spoke from many faith traditions, and as our mayor offered words of support and inspiration, we talked about Zion Woods and the efforts for affordable housing in Deerfield. As candles were lit and songs were sung, we spoke of resolve in moving forward. There was a sense of hope, an idea that even if this community was once exclusive and hateful, it does not need to remain so. Things change. We may get used to the destruction, we may get used to the despair, but it's also wise to remember that we never know when that destruction and despair will open to the possibility and hope of the future. There is a Sufi story about this. Once upon a time, a young boy went to a master craftsman because he wanted to learn how to make jade into beautiful objects. So he went to the master's house, knocked on the door, and said he'd come to sit at the master's feet to learn. The master took a piece of jade, put it into the boy's hands, and sat there. He went on to chatter about his wife, his job, his children, and things like that. All the while, the boy was sitting there, minute after minute, hour after hour, holding the jade. The next day, the boy came back, and the same thing happened. The master put a piece of jade in the boy's hand, and then the master went off and talked about all kinds of things. The boy was getting somewhat discombobulated, but this was the master, and he was very embarrassed or hesitant to say anything to him. So this happened week after week after week. And one day the boy came, and the master put into his hand a stone. And the boy cried out and said, "Hey, this is a stone. This isn't jade." The Sufis then turn this story on its head, and they tell it in a different way. Once upon a time, a boy went to the master to learn how to make jade. And when he went there, the master put a stone in his hand. Every day he put the stone in the boy's hand, and week after week after week, the same thing happened. And then one day he put a piece of jade into the boy's hand. The boy exclaimed, "What is this?" And he dropped it, and the jade broke all over the floor. The Sufis then comment on this story, saying that if you keep on holding something valuable and beautiful, you'll get a feel for it, and you'll know the counterfeit when you see it. By the same token, if you keep on holding a stone in your hand, when something beautiful comes along, you won't recognize it. You'll drop it out of shock and disbelief. Sort of like Mary Magdalene. In John's gospel account, she is stuck on the idea that her beloved teacher is dead. She is so weighted down with her grief and pain that she misses the fact that Jesus is standing right there by the tomb. It sounds fantastical, even comical, that she could be so oblivious. But how often do we accustom ourselves to the disrepair of our lives or of the world and take that at face value? When we console ourselves that one terrible thing or another is just the way it is, and then we get used to it. The poet Gerard Manley Hopkins says that even despair can be a comfort when it's familiar. He calls it carrion comfort. But the good news is this: things change. New life emerges. Hope arrives. The destruction of the past gives way to the possibility of the future. These changes are not usually expected. Sometimes they come as a great surprise. Indeed, we never know when, in the wake of death and destruction, something new will emerge, giving us assurance. We just have to wait and not get too comfortable and be ready to recognize it when it stands next to the tomb. My spiritual companions, amen. I love you, and blessed be.